This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I had promised to reform the economy for the long-term good by fighting major imbalances that has plagued our economy, ending the subsidy and the preferential exchange rate system were key to this fight.
That was Nigerian President Bola Tinubu defending his controversial decision to scrap the fuel subsidy. Details coming up. Also, envoys from the West African bloc ECOWAS are expected in Niger today, and health experts in Nigeria say long-term breastfeeding has enormous health benefits. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nigerian labor unions held meetings with the government to discuss the removal of fuel subsidies that have led to increases in fuel prices and the threat of strikes. The meeting comes a day after the president announced a $650 million financial package to assist households hurt by economic reforms. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
During a televised address, President Bola Tinubu defended his decision to scrap the fuel subsidy, saying it only benefited a few so-called elites. Tinubu said he was aware of the hardships that the decision caused citizens and promised his government was working to help. The latest measures announced by the president include allocations for a review of the minimum wage, support for micro, small and medium-scale enterprises, and the purchase of 3,000 gas-powered buses to reduce the high cost of transportation. Tinubu also ordered the immediate release of 200,000 metric tons of grains to households in an effort to lower prices, and 225,000 metric tons of fertilizers, seedlings, and other inputs to farmers.
I had promised to reform the economy for the long-term good by fighting major imbalances that has plagued our economy, ending the subsidy and the preferential exchange rate system were key to this fight. This fight is to define the fate and future of our nation.
Upon assuming office in late May, Tinubu embarked on some of Nigeria's biggest reforms in decades, including floating of the country's currency, the Naira. Fuel prices have more than tripled since the subsidy removal, and the currency has weakened against the U.S. dollar. The developments increased pressure on the government to ease the suffering caused by the policies. Authorities say the decision will pay off in the long run. On Monday, Tinubu said the country has saved $1.32 billion since scrapping the subsidy in late May. He said, quote, "Such a vast sum of money would have been better spent on public transportation, healthcare, schools, housing, and even national security," end quote. But economist Isaac Boti said authorities should have implemented measures in advance to cushion the effects of removing the subsidy.
What the government needs to have done, or ought to have done rather, would have been to have created the shock absorber. But trying to salvage a crisis after it has occurred, for me, is an afterthought. So what the president expressed in his speech, what things he should have done or should have been put in place before the pronouncement of subsidy removal.
But he says Nigeria needs to consider local oil refining if it is going to bring down soaring fuel prices.
What is the plan, both short-term, medium-term, long-term plans, to address the issue of refining petroleum products in Nigeria? Whatever measure the government is bringing on board should be able to address the realities on ground.
Last month, Tinubu announced plans to transfer $10 to 12 million poor households in a bid to ease the impact of the subsidy removal. Meanwhile, the labor unions met with government officials, hoping to reach an agreement that will prevent workers from holding a planned protest on Wednesday. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
As World Breastfeeding Week is being commemorated, health experts in Nigeria say long-term breastfeeding has enormous health benefits on working mothers and their newborn. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, has more.
This year's theme is focused on support for working mothers. Health experts say that means extending maternity leave up to 6 months to provide more bonding between the mother and her newborn. Nigeria's Minister of Health recommends the early start of breastfeeding within 1 hour of birth and exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life. Dr. Abdullahi Musa is the chief registrar in the Department of Family Health at Ahmadu Bello University Teaching Hospital in Zaria, Kaduna State. He tells VOA that exclusive breastfeeding by working mothers have been on the decline.
The reasons are not far-fetched. Working mothers wants to keep their work pace and earn money. As a result of that, they result into infant formulas for their babies while they focus on their work so that they can make money at the end of the month.
Musa maintains that breast milk should be the baby's main source of nutrition for the first year of life. Children who are fed only breast milk get sick less often than babies who eat other foods. He says not using the mother's milk should be discouraged.
There are still women out there without any form of health issues that choose not to breastfeed their babies. This might be as a result of their cultural beliefs or their personal beliefs. Some believe that breastfeeding their babies will result in their breasts sagging and they will not be able to be informed.
Recalling her own experience, a working mother, Esther Ojo, says it was difficult combining work and breastfeeding.
I had to work with my baby when he was just 4 months old. I resumed and I always had to be with him because it was difficult for me to express breast milk and leave for him because of the hours that I had to be at work.
Banker and working mother Chioma Chinedu has a four-month-old baby. She acknowledges that it is challenging for her to exclusively breastfeed.
It's not a good one at all. I'm not enjoying it. And I feel the system is not being so kind to our children, our newborn. Because if you would tell a working mom to resume work after 3 months, what about the child? You don't think about the child. What happens to the child by that 3 months? And the government is preaching exclusive breastfeeding everywhere you go.
The World Health Organization confirms that breastfeeding is safe, clean, and contains antibodies which help protect against many common childhood illnesses. But the practice remains a challenge for working mothers. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
The United Nations Libya mission has warned against unilateral initiatives to address the country's political stalemate after the House of Representatives and the State Council proposed creating a new interim administration to replace the Government of National Unity as a precursor to elections. UN envoy to Libya Abdullahi Batali said the electoral laws in their current state will not facilitate successful elections. Rayonan Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi what prompted the UN special envoy to issue this warning.
The UN envoy has been overseeing this protest for elections for some time. The HSC and HOR came up with an electoral law and a roadmap to elections, but it had many issues with it. So many different Libyan stakeholders and communities are very unhappy with the law as it stands. It's not very inclusive. It also requires the formation of a new interim government to oversee elections. And as we've seen in Libya's past, trying to agree a government takes a long time and usually creates more division rather than creating more kind of unity around it. And so Bathily, the UN envoy, Envoy has been pushing for amendments to this law, but the Libyan actors have pushed ahead with it anyway. And so this is really a push by the UN to try and force the Libyan actors to change their tune and to amend the law as it stands.
The UN mission said unilateral actions like similar attempts seen in the past could inflict serious negative consequences for Libya and trigger further instability and violence. UN envoy to Libya, Abdullah Batili, said the electoral laws in their current state will not facilitate successful elections. What's the way out then?
This is the problem that the UN is facing, because although the UN and many of the Western countries are putting pressure on the Libyan actors, the Libyan status quo actors, to change the electoral process, they don't actually have the power to force them to do it. There is no, at the moment, no alternative for the UN to say, if you don't do this, we will go down this other route. That isn't the option. So actually, they have very limited options. One way would be for there to be an increase in international pressure. So real, strong, high-level international pressure from the likes of the US and some of the European nations, as well as key countries acting in Libya, such as Turkey and Egypt and others. That would, I think, have a chance of persuading the Libyan act to change course. However, we've seen Egypt, for example, throughout this process has always backed the HOR and its kind of control of the political process. It has done the same this time. So Egypt is still very much behind the HOR's current plan. So, and I think Libya just isn't high enough up the agenda of many, you know, global capitals. So I'm not sure that will happen. The other option is for, as I mentioned, the UN to try and come up with an alternative mechanism. But I think the danger of that is that the UN will be accused of foreign interference, of trying to take the process out of Libyan hands. So it does make it very difficult to kind of amend as it stands.
UN diplomacy this year has focused on pushing the Libyan rivals to agree on constitutional and legal change that would let presidential and parliamentary elections go ahead. But they have so far failed to finalize such changes. What's behind this?
The same issue that Libya's been facing for many years now. The HSC and the HOR have been in power now for 10 years. They were, you know, only elected for 3 or 4 years back when they were elected. We've been through several cycles of different political processes. You know, they nearly had elections in 2021. They didn't happen. And what we've seen is spoiling activity from the politicians, but also from all the armed actors and other powerful actors that support them and surround them. And essentially, it's the actors that currently have power in Libya do not want to relinquish that power through elections. They don't want to risk losing their influence, and therefore through the UN process and other activities, they try to undermine and spoil the electoral process. So actually, these moves by the HOR, their resistance to changing the electoral laws to make them more inclusive, are probably on purpose. You know, if the electoral laws become more inclusive, more accepted by the wider population, it's much more likely that successful elections will happen, and therefore much more likely that they will lose their positions. Whereas if they continue to say they're moving ahead with a political process, but actually one that has very major built-in flaws. On the one hand, they can say, well, we are trying to do elections, we're trying to move ahead, while at the same time knowing they are very likely, the elections are likely to fail, but that they can say we tried, but, you know, still hold on to their positions for, you know, more years to come.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehayas Wahib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Envoys from the West African bloc ECOWAS are expected in Niger today, a week after a coup that triggered alarm among neighbors and allies. Economic Community of West African States ECOWAS leaders on Sunday imposed trade and financial sanctions and gave the coup leaders a week to reinstate Niger's democratically elected president Mohamed Bazoum or face potential use of force. A delegation led by former Nigerian President Abdul Salami Abubakar is scheduled to fly to Niamey today, a senior source in ECOWAS and a Nigerian military official told the French news agency AFP. ECOWAS military chiefs are also expected to start a three-day meeting in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Nigeria's Chief of Staff Christopher Musa said in an interview on RFI Hausa on Monday that he said, "We are ready, and as soon as we receive the order to intervene, we will do so." But junta-ruled Mali and Burkina Faso warned that any military intervention in their neighborhood would be tantamount to a declaration of war against them. Military chiefs from the West African bloc ECOWAS are holding talks in Nigeria today about last week's coup in Niger. As we just reported, the regional economic bloc ECOWAS has set a deadline for junta leaders to restore ousted President Mohamed Bazoum or face a possibility of military intervention. VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo reports from Kenya on the heightened tensions in the Sahel region.
With 4 days left until a deadline to return power to Niger's democratically elected President Mohamed Bazoum and Niger's neighbors Mali and Burkina Faso warning against any military intervention, tensions couldn't be higher in the Sahel this week. Nasiru Seydou is the head of the Voice of the Voiceless, a human rights organization. Speaking to VOA from Niger's capital, Niamey, he says he doesn't think ECOWAS will intervene militarily because they didn't do it in Burkina Faso or Mali during recent coups.
C'est le dialogue qui devrait être privilégié.
He says dialogue should take center stage in situations like these. The security concerns the new coup leaders gave as reasons in the zones of Tillaberi, Diffa, and other places where they believe the Bazoum government has not been very effective. That's the reason, he says, why the military in Burkina Faso and Mali are also convinced that the security situation in the Liptako-Gourma could only be improved with the combined efforts of those three armies. The Liptako-Gourma is an area in the central Sahel region that falls in eastern Burkina Faso, southwestern Niger, and a portion of southeast central Mali. In 2021, the Food and Agricultural Organization, FAO, sounded the alarm about a crisis there caused by increasing competition for resources, climatic disruption, high levels of poverty, and violence caused by organized crime networks and non-state armed groups. But given tensions with Niger's current partners like France and the United States, Seydou says the new military leaders might turn to other powers for help in that region.
La situation telle qu'elle est tendue entre le Niger et la France.
With the high tensions between Niger and France, between the military and the French presidency, the situation is not favorable for continued relations, he says, especially when it comes to France and its allies helping Niger get out of the situation. So, he adds, the Niger military doesn't have a choice but look elsewhere. France and the European Union suspended aid to Niger after last week's coup. France, whose embassy was attacked recently by coup supporters, has started evacuating some of its citizens and the citizens of other nations out of Niger. ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, also imposed sanctions. But Guinea, whose leader, Mamadi Doumbouya, recently came to power through a coup, denounced that measure. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said he spoke to Niger's President Bazoum late Tuesday and reiterated the United States and its partners' support for democratic governance. The U.S. recently granted $504 million to finance an infrastructure regional project connecting Niamey and the Benin port city of Cotonou. That, along with other projects, could be affected, says Michael Shurkin, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and the director of global programs at 14 North Strategies, an Africa-focused business advisory group.
The truth remains that Tiani, right, the coup leader, is putting all of this in jeopardy. He has put all the USA in jeopardy. He's already lost the French have cut budget support. The French have cut their aid. The US might eventually cut its aid. U.S. probably will cut security assistance.
While some say the international community's responses to the coup are highly appropriate, Shurkin says the cutoff in aid might have other consequences.
6 months from now, if the French have cut off the Americans are packing up, the EU's packing up, realistically, and the economy's tanking, I see the Nigerian leader will play populist politics, will step up the anti-French rhetoric and reach out to the Russians. This all seems very plausible to me.
For now, all eyes are on Niger as the deadline to return power to Bazoum draws near. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Washington this week, fellows from the Young Africa Leaders Initiative are gathered for the Mandela Washington Summit to meet with each other and U.S. officials. VOA's Anthony Labruto spoke with some of the fellows about the program and what they hope to do when they return home.
Fellows at the Washington Mandela Summit in Washington, D.C., the future is limitless. As the 2023 Young African Leaders Initiative wraps up, many fellows look forward to going back to Africa and starting their good work. For Linda Mbayasi, educating agriculture workers through policy in her home country of Kenya will be the primary goal for when she gets home.
Yeah, I just plan to empower farmers with policy information because they are really excluded when it comes to policy, and just hoping to make it easier for them to digest and consume policy documents and information.
Bojozi Antoinette Nwebe, a fellow from Botswana, has gained many civic leadership skills that she can take back to her local communities.
So I have made a commitment to my country and my community to use agriculture as a science to develop communities, to empower women and girls, and to also use agriculture and leverage it to stand against sexual violence and gender-based violence. So now that the fellowship is over, I'm looking forward to being a servant leader in my community and continuing the work that I was doing by building community gardens as safe spaces for women and girls and take a stand against sexual violence and gender-based violence in my community.
For Christine Lopez Miguel, an Angolan YALI fellow, educating the next generation is her top priority.
I plan to continue working in education. I stand for education. I work for young people because I do really believe if we start to empower young people, showing them that vocational education is very important to empower them, to make sure that they are strong enough to continue and pursue their dreams, they will achieve their goals and they will help Africa to be better.
At the Washington Mandela Summit in Washington, D.C., I'm Anthony Labruto for VOA News.
This week, VOA's English to Africa service is celebrating our 60th anniversary. My colleague, Heidi Adams, had the privilege of interviewing Marlene Selvi, the first staff member to start working for the service back in January 1963. Here's part two of their conversation.
I guess we don't understand the digital age, and they certainly would not understand with typewriters, actually doing a script on a typewriter. And then with tape, we had to learn to edit it manually. It was brown tape, and then we had white splicing tape. And if you needed to make a correction, you sliced literally the brown tape with a razor blade and used the white tape to make corrections. Computers did not come on the scene for years, and we had to make that adjustment. And we broadcast by shortwave. There was no satellite for years. We also, in the Africa division, had another branch besides the English branch that sent tapes to Africa, sent materials by tape in diplomatic pouch and also by satellite. And so that started the idea of trying to get materials to Africa to be played on radio stations there. So there were a lot of ways that we worked to do this, but it's so removed now after 60 years that most VOA staffers today would never be able to understand what we did.
And that's why it's great talking to you about this. Marilyn, when you left VOA, what was the English to Africa division like then? And, you know, when you look back on the team that you were part of, what all of you had accomplished and you playing an important role in that, how did that make you feel? How does it make you feel today?
Oh, it's terrific. I would love to be part of things today, and I'm so admiring of what you're able to do. I did not stay only in African programming, English programming to Africa, during my 33 years at VOA.
That was a founding member of the VOA English to Africa team, Marilyn Selvey. She was speaking to VOA's Heidi Adams. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.